Welcome to National MI's Educational Sales Podcast Series, hosted by mortgage sales consultants Pat Sherlock and Bobby Welch. This podcast is brought to you by National MI University. We are committed to delivering quality education. Now let's get started.
Hello, everybody. This is Pat Sherlock, and I have with me Bobby Welch.
Hey, Pat, it's good to be here. I'm looking forward to today's topic.
Well, it's really interesting. We're going to talk about doubling your business using events. And I think it's a pretty hot topic because many originators are looking for what can make them different. And certainly events fall into that category. So maybe it makes sense to talk in the big picture about why we should do events and then go into the types of events. So, Bobby, why don't you share your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, I think it's perfect to start with why, because I don't think enough people realize the power of events and what they really mean to their business, their reputation, the bottom line. And, you know, I'd say that I'd start out by saying that one of the big reasons you want to do it is the format. It's a one-to-many format. So there's a lot of leverage in building your brand and networking, getting to know people. And so I really like that. I also like the fact that it's about paying it forward, that you are putting on something that should have some kind of value, whether it's educational value or maybe it's just fun, maybe it's just a mixer, but that still provides value and provides levity, and paying it forward always creates something. But I will say that sometimes there's a little bit too much emphasis on the fun ones. We want to be careful. There's a double-edged sword. You want to make sure that you have plenty of educational and events that are positioning yourself as the expert, because that's also one of the big reasons why you want to do events, is the positioning that it gives you if you're picking smart topics, smart events, and things to either hold yourself or sponsor.
So would you see a difference between, and this is something we talked about before, an online event or an offline? Or do you kind of look at them in the same way?
No, I look at them the same way. I think there's a lot of value in changing up the format of the events. But in a very general term, the events that I'm talking about and that I really push my team and my guys to do are the ones we've all heard about, right? We know about lunch and learns. Mm-hmm. We know about webinars. Webinars are very, very powerful. But, you know, I've also seen people do really creative stuff like model home socials for builders, or CE classes. Those are very popular because, you know, we've got to do them and we don't have a choice, and hosting some of those, happy hours, those type of things. Any and all of that. Really, I just classify an event as coming up with a way to assemble a more than two or three people at one place at one time and doing something with them. It's really that broad.
So why don't we talk a little bit about the types of events and then talk a little bit more about how you structure it effectively, and talk a lot about, you know, maybe some examples of some events that you saw that have worked.
Yeah. The types of events I would structure, I would kind of create a quadrant. If you can kind of think about, you know, a square with four quadrants to it, there are small events and there are large events. Mm-hmm. And then there are digital events, and then there are what I call analog events, offline, real world. And between all of those types, you know, so a webinar, it could be small or large, but it's definitely digital. Mm-hmm. Most of the webinars that people are pulling, you know, they don't get hundreds of people in attendance. Most of the time, it's only a dozen or so.
Right.
And so most of the time it's smaller, but you do want to, when you're looking at the type, we've already mentioned that you want to switch up between webinar versus lunch and learn versus mixer, but you also want to switch up the size, because a really large event is great for networking and picking up new leads and kind of going wide very quickly and building maybe a lead list. But the smaller events allow you to take and serve people at a more intimate level and drive relationships deep. Mm-hmm. So you want to do a little bit of a combination. So for us, for example, we like to do a large event at least three times a year, but usually four times a year. Mm-hmm. And those are big networking events, and we have a lot of people there, you know, at least 50 or more people if you're trying to go large. And, you know, gosh, there was an annual party we used to throw in Salt Lake City back in the day when I was doing business in that market. And it got so popular, like hundreds of people showed up. And it was great. Some of them can become legendary. But, you know, you can really only, bandwidth-wise, you know, three, four times a year, plenty. The smaller events, you really should be trying to do at least 2 small events a month. And that, to me, that's a minimum. I know high producers and I know aggressive loan officers that are doing events every week, to where they, you know, they just don't rest until they've got their next lunch and learn scheduled, or they don't rest until their next webinar is done. So, you know, the more events that you do, if they're high quality events, then of course, the more people you put yourself in front of and serve, and the bigger your business gets.
So why don't we talk about maybe some samples? And the actual word event, I think many times just scares loan officers, because an event sounds really large and something that would be difficult to do. But in the real world, and you've kind of already started to talk about it, you know, they do take other formats that actually could work, you know, very well. And I think it was a good comment that you made about looking to go more in depth with the smaller events. So why don't we talk about some samples of things that you see have that worked, and then talk about how do you structure to make something like that really happen? And then we can talk a little bit about smaller events, the webinar side.
Yeah. And here's the thing. There's nothing I'm going to share as far as the things I've seen work are going to sound overly revolutionary. Some of them are more creative than others. And those of you that are listening that have a creative streak in you, you're going to have a much easier time with this. But I will warn you not to get overly creative or overly out there. You want your event to stand out, but sometimes the old faithfuls, the things that have worked in the past, we tend to dismiss them. We tend to think they're old school, and we dismiss their value, and they are still relevant today. And I'll give you a primary driver. Good friend of mine. She's a great originator. We were talking the other day, and she's hosting. She's getting ready to do a first-time homebuyers class. Well, geez, we've been doing first-time homebuyer classes for ages. And so it's easy to dismiss that idea, but the way she's doing it is really smart. You know, she's aligned herself with several independent insurance agents so that all of their renter policies are invited. And she's got a couple of her favorite realtors coming. And so they're tag teaming it. So that event not only is going to put her and her team in front of potential borrowers, but she's structuring it in a way where key relationships that will be long-term referral resources, their relationships are actually being driven deeper in the process. And that's really what you want to learn with your events, is to look 360 and realize that sometimes you're serving and expanding on more than one type of relationship at a time, if that makes sense. Other events that really work well is anything in which you can teach an agent to grow their business. Again, it doesn't have to be rocket science. You can teach them how to shoot YouTube videos. You know, you could teach them how to edit YouTube videos. You could teach them, you know, the basics of a Facebook business page. You could teach them the importance of credit capacity and collateral. You can teach them about your latest renovation product. The key is that you want to understand what the needs are, what the challenges and the aspirations are of your target audience, and just make sure that your event topic feeds into that. And of course, if you can ride current events, then it also makes the event more powerful. So I'll give you an example. Last night, our team just had a big Thanksgiving mixer. Well, you know, Thanksgiving's down the road. People are thinking about Thanksgiving. You know, doing an event around that was pretty easy to get people enrolled in there. If something's happening in your market, you know, ride that and push it forth. So really, the sky's the limit. And the only thing that I would counsel people on is just know that as you start to build these events out, you're also training people how to think about you as a professional.
Right.
So the only advice I would give is don't get stuck in a rut. You know, don't be only the rehabilitation guy, because you're going to get pigeonholed. Don't only be the, hey, come drink with me guy, come to my mixer. Make sure that you're at least throwing some variety in there, and make sure that you sit back and say, we like to do a 90-day calendar of what's coming up. And we just make sure that we've got a mix of educational, business building, and fun activities all sprinkled in there, so that we build the reputation we want in our community the right way.
Well, I think they're great points. And I think maybe this is a great time to talk about mistakes that people make with events. And I have a couple that I would want to share with everyone today. Number one is these obviously require a planning capacity. You have to plan to pull these things off, especially the large events. And I think it's realistic to allot the time that you're talking about. If you are using a 90-day calendar, you really do have to allow enough time to make sure that this all does come off. The other thing that I would say from an event standpoint is that you're going to have deadlines, and this really does go with the planning side of it. You need to make sure that you match to the deadlines, and it's something that does require an organizational component with it. And I think that the other thing is that, and I think you really kind of touched on it, that the event does have to have a purpose and something that's relevant to the people that would bring them to the event. I certainly like the idea of doing frequent education, and today you can do that online quite easily, but in addition, you can do lunch and learns, which are the fairly typical method. But I do think the mistakes that I see do hover around. It's like anything, it takes more time than you think. And to pull it off correctly, where you do get a great attendance, does require a commitment of effort for sure. Anything that you comes to mind?
I would double underline, highlight and circle.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
The part about relevancy to your key audience. And I'll give you another example. So one of our biggest events for many years before some of the licensing changed was in December. We would throw it for a while in our state. Every single year, you had to repeat an ethics class every single year, period. It was just this thing. And then some national licensing took over and that went away. But there was a streak in which, you know, that was what's there. That class was not sexy. That class was not fun. But we would bring the trainer in, outside trainer, by the way. We just teamed up with them and paid them. We'd bring the trainer in. We would put a nice lunch together. And we would throw the class every December. Now, why did we throw the class every December? Well, because there was a deadline looming, December 31st. And there were a ton of people in our market that always waited until the last minute for this class. Huge need, like non-negotiable, not sexy, but non-negotiable. And so we capitalized on it. We leveraged it and we got in front of them in a very super simple way. So the better in tune, the more direct you get with, hey, what do they need now? The easier it is to fill a room and then the better your brand grows.
Oh, yeah. I think they're great points. And I think that is the creative side of pulling this together. What does make it seem interesting and fun at times, and also obviously something that's appropriate, which I think leads us to this other issue of maybe this is a great time to talk about some ideas that you think are great event ideas. A couple that I can share. One of the things that I saw a top producer do that I just thought was very clever also was the fact that she would throw a party at, you know, the end of the year, but she would throw it for her realtors and her customers. So she made it a high-end event, and she invited her realtors and her customers together. So it wasn't her pitching products to potential people. These were people she had done business with, but also the issue of bringing together realtors. And so this was an event that was highly looked at. Obviously, not everyone can do that. And she had been an experienced originator for many years. But again, very clever in the thinking that she really was giving the realtor an opportunity to meet her customers, which I thought was good.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, a strategy to consider too is, it sounds like she's been doing this for a while, which they become, you know, they create their own momentum when you do repeat events, whether it's monthly or annual. So that's very smart to get into that rhythm because it makes the next time you throw it even easier. But I will tell you that sometimes you want to just make sure that your event isn't competing with too many other events. So for example, I don't do Christmas parties. Too much going on, too much competition. I love Thanksgiving mixers. I love Thanksgiving parties. I also, for a lot of years, I also threw a Chinese New Year party in February. Super fun. And nobody's doing anything in February. Like February is one of those cold, boring months where nothing's going on. And there's plenty of time since the new year for people to rest and get ready to show up. So again, creativity. Just be creative and mix it up. You know what I would like to talk about, though, is what to do around the event. Because people really get events wrong when it comes to what the real value of the event is and how to extract value from the event, if you want to talk about that.
Well, I think that's a great point. Sure. Share your thoughts.
One of the biggest things that I very early in the process teach, you know, anyone that I'm coaching or anyone on my team is that the event itself, believe it or not, is not the big payoff. It's actually the, you know, call it the motivator. It's the catalyst for the value that you're going to extract. There's really four steps to turn an event, or four phases to turn an event into extra business. And if you just throw the event and then leave, you're not going to extract the level of business out of it that you need to. And that's why a lot of people will throw, I remember I was coaching like about a year and a half, 2 years ago, I was coaching a loan officer that, you know, been in the business like 20 plus years. And he was just so ticked off that all the agents were showing up at his mixers and he wasn't seeing any business from it, but he wasn't throwing the event right. So the four phases that you need to look at, and then we'll talk about metrics in a minute, is the first one is meaningful engagement prior to the event. And meaningful engagement, those are the conversations and the contacts that the event allows you to make as you're prepping for the event. There's three levels of engagement that I recommend people kind of weave together so that you're touching people, you know, anywhere from 3 to 5 times prior to the event, so that you're increasing your brand awareness while you're doing it. They understand your name more, but you also help enroll them to come to the event. The highest level engagement, you know, the highest form are live conversations, like talk about the event at networking events, talk about the event when you're doing your drop-ins, and phone calls. Mm-hmm. That's the cream of the crop. And by the way, if you don't do that a lot, your events are going to flop. Especially now in the digital era, people try to digitally make events happen and they flop. Fallout. You have to reach too many people digitally for them to remember to show up. But the second tier, as long as you're doing plenty of the first tier, the second tier would be social media, especially video and posts going on social media. And then the third tier would be some email and texting around it. And again, I actually like to, with my guys, I like to teach them to create a web of the contacts. So reach out, make a phone call. If you get their voicemail, leave them a quick voicemail about what's going on. And in the voicemail, tell them you're going to email them and then immediately forward them an email. Way more powerful than if you just mass email everybody. At least if your goal, you know, if your goal is to call as many people as you can in an hour, maybe that's not the way to do it. If your goal is to send 150 emails in 30 seconds, maybe that's not the best way to do it. But if that's your goal, you're missing the point. If your goal is to get people to your event and that's how you're going to measure your productivity, then I would recommend that 1-2 punch. And then, you know, at the end of the day, make a quick video and tag the people that you left messages for and have it all linked together. So that pre-engagement, that meaningful engagement prior to the event, massive opportunity for marketing and having something meaningful to talk about during your farming and your prospect calls and all of those things.
So what would be some of this other steps that we only have a few more minutes left that we want to share with our listeners today?
Well, then the next step is actually the event.
Right.
And the metric there, so is, you know, how many guests you get there.
Sure.
And then right after that comes the follow-up. Mm-hmm. So the big thing is don't throw a mixer unless you're willing to get sales appointments out of the mixer. That's what my, you know, coaching buddy that I told you was so frustrated. You know, he'd get 30 people to show up to the event, you know, and measuring and saying, hey, I had a successful event, 30 people showed up. That's great. But I would say that the success measurement is really how many coffees did you book right after the event? Mm-hmm. And what kind of sales activity did you get? If you skip this step, if you don't hold yourself accountable to that metric, don't throw the event. Don't waste. And then sales activity, depending on the event, you can also create extra goals after the event to engage people in. Because again, anytime you have people make micro commitments or make an engagement after the event, it actually helps your relationship. There's a lot of psychology around there, but you know, give you an example, you know, after our Thanksgiving mixers, because we sponsor the food bank during the mixer itself, we play a game on how many last minute donations we can get in the 48 hours following the event, because it gives us a reason to follow up in a powerful way, gives us something to talk about, either when we're calling somebody who didn't make it, hey, sorry, you missed it. And by the way, we're a little short on our goal. And do you have the means and do you have the heart to help out? That gives us another reason to have a great conversation with a potential client and deepen a relationship. Because sometimes with salespeople, that's what we're missing, right? Is a reason to call. and we can kill two birds with one stone. And then also making sure you're doing lots of follow-up with e-cards and handwritten cards and thoughtful texts and those kind of things. So that, again, the purpose of the event is you want to be able to get in front of somebody, you know, 3, 5, 7 times because of the event that you held. And then lastly, you want to make sure that you're covering the event in social media. Doesn't matter if you just wrap up a 15-person webinar or maybe a 10 realtor lunch and learn. You know, why just impact 10 or 20 people when you could do a quick Facebook live video on your business page and then boost it, and 2,500 agents in the area see that you just did a rehabilitation webinar, which means, hey, you must know about rehabilitation loans. And it expands the impact of the event you just did because of the post-event work that you do. And so you want to be measuring what steps and, you know, what sales activity can I hold myself accountable after the event to maximize it. And if you do all those three steps correctly, then that turns into loan volume.
Well, these are all great ideas. In fact, I think they're really fabulous from the standpoint that this is an arena that I don't think many loan officers participate with or do. They want their lender to do all this. And this is really part of your sales toolkit. And I think it's been really great. Any last thoughts that you would like to share on it?
You know, one, and it's based on what you just said, even if you are with a lender that does a good job holding and sponsoring events for you, that's great. But it is up to you. That kind of pre-work, post-work to maximize, the lender can't do that for you. So even if you are lucky enough to be somewhere where you're kind of spoon-fed some really great events, you know, it's on you to turn that into business.
Right. That's certainly, I think for next year, as we're looking at more difficult marketplace, that these are the types of things that originators really need to take to heart and to certainly do. So I want to thank everybody today for listening. I want to wish you a great sales week and certainly look forward to attending our next webinar. Thanks a lot, Bobby.
Yeah, thanks everyone. Thanks, Pat.
Thanks for listening. If you have a topic to suggest, please tell your National MI account manager, and you may soon see it as part of our sales podcast series.